What's up? I'm Tyler.
And I'm Dakota.
And this is the Bourbon and Business Podcast,
where we interview successful businessmen and women to let you in on why success doesn't have a single formula to follow.
We also have a little bourbon tasting along the way, because why not?
So guys, please enjoy this episode and let us know your thoughts at Bourbon and Business Podcast on Instagram.
Coming to you from the Bourbon and Business Studio here in the Capitol Club in downtown Jackson, Mississippi. I'm Tyler.
And I'm Dakota.
And this is the Bourbon and Business Podcast. How you doing this morning, Dakota?
Fantastic, Tyler. Behind your head is a beautiful scene of Jackson.
I know. I wish I could see it. So instead, I'm looking at you.
Yeah. Well, you know, they give the best guest or the best host the best view.
So. Oh, is that it? Well, yeah. That's why you're looking at me. So, well, you want to introduce our guest just this morning?
Yes, I do. I do. Today we have special guest Coy Gauthier. He is the CEO of SCS.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Glad to have you this morning.
It's an honor.
And Dakota, let's tell our guests a little bit about the Capitol Club.
Yeah, the Capitol Club is the event space in downtown Jackson, in the Jackson Metro, really. It is on the 19th and now 20th floor. Right next to the Capitol building here in downtown Jackson. They've got the best views, panoramic views. They've got event space. They've got events. They've got everything.
Yeah. Best place in Jackson. If you go online, check them out. You can check their memberships out. They do lunch here daily. Great space and great networking opportunity.
Absolutely.
So, well, what bourbon do you have for us today?
Today we have Blackland Bourbon Whiskey, and it's from Fort Worth. And I think it's about a... I think it's like an 82 proof. I think that's right.
Yeah. Well,
it's really, got a sweet bottle, though.
Yeah. Really cool bottle.
Yeah.
I mean, I like it. I'm going to have to drop in at an 8.7.
8.7. Okay. That's a strong rating there. So, it's got a great smell to it, too.
Yeah. Really good whiskey.
Yeah.
Coy, we appreciate you coming on the podcast today. We like to always start this off, kind of give your story to our listeners, tell them, you know, how you got into the tech industry, and then tell us about SCS, how you got that started.
Okay, well, it's a kind of a long story getting into the where I started personally. I was one of those geeks even as a kid. I learned what a computer program was by playing Nibbles on a... maybe a 286 or 386 computer, and I wanted to know how that program worked. So I opened it up, and it was a little quick basic application on these old computers that came with the operating system, and I said, wow, this is really neat. I was also learning a little bit about programming in school, you know, of course, middle school and then high school. But really, when it really took off was in ninth grade. You know, I realized that there was actually a online community. Now, it's before the internet, right? So this is a dial-up online community where, you know, you take your house phone, right? And you have to do what's called a coupler, right? And it's like earphones for your handheld telephone set. And you put that on and connect it to your computer, and you would dial up a local bulletin board. And that's a lot like our message groups are today, right? So
wow.
You can trade messages with friends.
You're blowing a lot of people's minds right now.
Including mine. I had no idea how that worked. Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. We used to trade a lot of information. And, you know, if you had something to say and if you knew a thing or two, you'd be invited to these underground communities. And there you got to learn even more, you know, about serial code cracking and a little bit about decryption and encryption. A lot about the transmission of data across, you know, the wire, including emulators and these different protocols that you can use. And from there, you know, I got really entrenched. I'm telling you, I did this all day, every day, all night, every night, until I was a senior in high school. I rewrote a protocol in 10th grade so that I could get more efficient binary transfers, right? That is a ridiculous statement to be making. Your larger crowd probably doesn't care, but it is highly complicated work. But, you know, I like to tell my friends now, it's like even back then I was saving people money on their long distance bills. It takes less time to transfer those files, right. Which is kind of funny when you think about it.
Wow.
So from there, I was in a computer programming club. and for school and for college, but in school and high school, I was winning the contests at the local universities and, you know, statewide, and Texas and Louisiana, Mississippi. We were winning them all, and I got the attention of Exxon Chemical, who gave me my first job.
Wow!
I was 17 years old, one of the youngest employees, full-time employees I've ever had. And my job was in their laboratory, their quality assurance laboratory. And my job was to basically bring practicality and automation to the instruments they were using. And my tools were a dollar more than minimum wage and a Radio Shack gift card.
Wow.
And a laboratory full of instruments that needed automation and connection. And my boss told me then, get creative. Yeah. What you can. And I did. Within my first 2 years, I won a national award for instrument automation. I had invented a way to connect some devices that had never been attempted before, and we succeeded, saving the plant nearly $250,000 a year.
Wow.
Just in services.
Meanwhile, your salary is what?
Yeah, tell them, like, hey, I need a percentage of that.
$6 an hour?
I think it was seven. Yeah.
So, hey, can I get a 10% off that or something?
Yeah, right. A little commission there or something.
So I did all that also and did full-time college.
Wow.
So I was working at night 40 hours to 60 hours, and I carried a full load in college.
It's so interesting because, you know, you think of the tech industry, and I'm just going to say the stereotype around it, which is, in my view, a common misconception that people in tech are not creative. And I'm like, man, if you look at the tech companies, though, the engineers that are behind some of these things that are making these new products and innovations, it's not necessarily the marketing team that's doing that. They can make it look pretty and stuff, but the actual ideas and stuff are the engineers behind it and the coders who are like, hey, let's do this. What if we did that?
The truth of the matter there is that you need both.
Yeah.
There is an engineering approach. Mm-hmm. There's a sort of a scientific method, if you will, to solving any problem. And using that tried and true method, you are guaranteed an outcome, right? And I use the example, a Bachelor of Arts versus a Bachelor of Science degree. You need both. A Bachelor of Science might attack a problem using an engineering method, using a scientific method, and they're guaranteed an outcome. A BA is going to look more at the practicality, about more the why we're here, and try to look at the root of the problem. And sometimes their projects end up ridiculous failures, but other times they end up ridiculous successes, right? So when you combine the tools and craft and the ingenuity of both, that's what we do at SES, honestly, is we actually have both types on our team.
Mm-hmm. That's when you get a winner, right?
It is.
Well, yeah.
And listen to you talk about getting into the tech industry when you did, it's almost like you were exploring a new frontier. Like it's the you know, y'all are figuring out ways as you go to make this work. I mean, almost you have to be an artist to a point because somebody's never done it before.
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking outside the box. So,
for sure. Everything we approached back then was.
I don't know if anybody's keyed that phrase, but I'm going to say it, the tech industry, the last frontier.
The last frontier. There you go. Yeah, we have space, but we'll go tech too.
Well, space, you know.
Is tech big or small? You know, you have to, that's a blow your mind there.
Yeah. You got, you know, those theories out there that the universe is ever expanding. Well, what if the microverse is ever
shrinking?
Yeah. That's what I proposed. You so I'm going to coin that one, Tyler.
Yeah, you are above my head on that one. But so Coy, so you worked there. So where did you land after you were at Exxon?
Okay. So from Exxon, and it's kind of a funny story here too. My mother and my family, they're old IBMers, right?
Okay. So tech background.
Tech background.
Yeah, the OG tech background.
OG. That's right. I mean, she graduated. She retired from IBM after 35 years.
Wow.
Something like that. Maybe more.
It's a good career.
Might be more. And so when I got the job at Exxon, my stepmother was just, wow, son, you've got a job for life.
Yeah.
You're 17 years old. You're done. Your plan in retirement is all done. She was so proud. And about 2.5 years later, I decided to take a different job. And when I announced that, she was very, very upset. But I was going to work for the state. I was going to work for the Department of Justice Attorney General's office in Louisiana. And she said, oh, my gosh, that's even better. Right? a state job. Wow, you know. So that worked out pretty well. I did my stint there. And if you can follow the career track, it's really going from Exxon, which was heavy on instrument automation, big data processing, and then going to the Department of Justice. We got into much more of the visual aspects of application development. Because I wrote a lot of their case management tools, right? So what all the attorneys log the time in, how you manage court cases, things like that. And that led to a lot of investigation tools, which led to me working hand-in-hand with their investigations division, which taught me a lot about forensics and just thinking a little more creatively about the online community and how that works, which was a completely different perspective than I'd had to that point.
Right. Well, and it is kind of wild now. You know, we think back 20 years ago where it wasn't the case, but I would say most crimes now are solved because of technology. Because, you know, whatever devices we're on, whatever videos are out there picking up, like right. Most crimes have a data stamp, have a time stamp, and, you know, have a person that they can pinpoint there.
Yeah.
Which is all thanks to tech, because beforehand it was, I mean, I guess good investigative work. I don't know, you know.
A keen eye for identifying right. similar fingerprints.
Right.
I don't know. I've always had doubts there. So the Attorney General's office is a great experience, and I got to see the legal side of things and that impact. But then went to work at this is heading into leading up to the year 2000 and all that debacle, right, where everybody's very scared it's going to be the end of the world.
Yeah, well, I remember that. My mom bought a bunch of water for some reason.
During that time, I was literally at an Entergy nuclear power station.
Okay. So you were a little nervous? People around you were a little nervous?
People around me a little nervous. Yeah. I wasn't. I know we did a good job. I must have touched 2,000 applications when I was there.
Wow.
Readying them for the changeover.
Well, if I'd have knew you then, I'd have gave you a gallon of water. We had plenty of it.
That was a lot of fun. So after that, I ended up taking a small break to work on an encryption algorithm and a compression algorithm. Worked on that for about 6 months. And finally, I just kind of had enough and said, well, I need to get a real job again. So a friend of mine said, hey, look, they're hiring in Mississippi. Why don't you take a look? And this was back when the telecom industry was really booming here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I joined up with the forces at SunCom, really talented team there. Really, really learned a lot. Now, we were talking about a transitional period in programming and in just any cell phone communications. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is back with the Nokia bricks were turning into the smartphones and palms, right?
Yeah.
And it was when the .NET infrastructure from the coding aspect was getting mainstream. It was an incredible time to be in computer science and a lot of fun. I worked there about 3 years as a consultant. I ended up being one of the people to turn off the lights in the building after all the mergers from SunCom and Tritel and all that, but it was a lot of fun. We all merged up into the AT&T wireless network, and then, you know, I got to look for a job again, right? So yeah. I said, what a time for me to build a company of my own, and that's when I decided to put my own shingle on the wall and call it SCS, and that was no looking back, no fail. It's gonna have to work. So that was 21 years ago.
Yeah. And do you feel like, you know, obviously you worked in, you know, I guess corporate America for a while there, but do you feel like you always had that drive to, hey, I want to do something on my own? I had that entrepreneurial spirit, wanted to start a company.
You know, that's funny. If you'd have asked me that during my bulletin board and hacking days, right, I probably would have been pretty upset with you, right? I would have been upset with myself. That's corporate America. Oh my gosh, the capitalistic.
Right.
Yeah, bit of a hippie kind of thing, you know. But now, you know, I look back on that, and yeah, I think I always knew that I wanted to do things on my own, so I could control one, the quality, and two, the intent.
Hmm.
You know, I just always in my soul, I just know that things could be done better with more, let's say, clarity and visibility. IT doesn't need to be hidden behind some veil and then out pops a product. It needs to be a collaborative effort. Because it's not just a geniuses in IT. It's geniuses in IT. It's geniuses in management. It's geniuses in production. It's geniuses dealing at your front counter.
Right.
You know, so all these people need to come together to build better solutions.
Right.
That's not typical, but that's what we do.
Right.
Yeah, that there's a, I'm going to call it this like fake wall almost, that some people, you know, they hear the word IT or they hear the word technology or they hear the word AI or, you know, anything tech related or software related, and their eyes just glaze over. They're like, I don't know anything about that. I'm not going to. And it's kind of like, well, you know, if you open your mind just a little bit to understand, then there is so much more that you could do as a team in that collaborative aspect, like you were just talking about, of if the engineers open up to the marketing team and vice versa, and the sales team gets involved too, and then you get the customer experience team involved too. And it's like, oh man, now we've got this beautiful place where people can come and actually get a well-valued product at a great price and then have a fantastic experience and, you know, refer people to you.
That's right. I mean, yeah, I think you really threaded the needle there, right? That's, and when we do that, you know, the entirety of us, our users, the management of those users, the production facility, whatever it is, we all benefit from that collaboration.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's been one of the most difficult parts of the job, yeah, is getting everybody to come together, check the egos at the door, and, hey, at least for now, there are no stupid questions. You know, there's a time,
sure,
you know, and, but.
Yeah. I ask them.
I love it. I love
that's
it.
My job.
That's why we have Tyler around.
We get on the whiteboards and we just figure out insane stuff. We've earned a reputation in our community of just solving impossible problems. And it's because we kind of have that can-try attitude, but we also have the benefit of understanding the effects of collaboration.
All right. Tell our listeners a little bit about, because we have a lot of them out there that, you know, are wanting to make the jump from corporate America, maybe to go out and start their own business. What was that like for you making that swap?
Absolutely frightening. It was absolutely frightening. But you have to push through that fear,
right,
Tyler? That's the, you know, you don't do it blindly. Know that the fear, know that the risks are there. You know, do what I call measured risk, right? You
right.
say, look, I can take this much risk before, you know, disaster, right? So you take as much as you can, but you don't let it stop you. And I think that's what my biggest advice is be aware of it, be aware of those obstacles, but don't let them stop you from approaching them. Sometimes they just look like obstacles. One of the most critical pieces of advice I got in starting my own business happened really early on by a friend of mine named Alan. And he said, Coy, in starting your business, is something you need to know is owning and running a successful business is a combination of 10 million little bitty decisions and 4 or 5 big ones. Just gets the big ones right and the other ones will just fall in place.
So okay. True.
Yeah,
so
some great
yeah.
advice there. If you get caught up in the minutiae of the every single day-to-day minute decisions, you know, where does this chair go, all that kind of stuff, you're never going to be able to mm-hmm. run the business well enough
right.
as well as you want it.
And I like how you pointed out the small things. You know, one thing I actually heard this from Ben Derrick. He's been on the podcast. Shout out to him. But, you know, and I like to tell my team is, you know, how we do anything is how we do everything. And that's, you know, that's such a...
Now, there's a phrase you need to trademark.
That's right.
Such a cliche thing to say, but that's true. You know, if we're on the small things, if we're willing to, you know, skimp and not do our best, then that's going to bleed into the big things. And I think that's such wise words from you, Coy, that, you know, it is a bunch of small things that leads to the big success. And I think for our listeners that hear this episode, they just got a really great piece of information from that there.
So. We approach things with that passion and enthusiasm that lead us to greatness. There's a concept of high performers and average performers, right? And you really don't, or it's difficult to have a successful team that has both. You really, you know, their high performers are going to not get along well with the average, and the average are going to resent the heck out of the high performers.
Oh, that's so true.
So building a team of all high performers is a challenge.
In building
a company with just average is a challenge.
Yeah.
And this is what all corporate America is facing.
Uh-huh.
And you hear the complaints. It's interesting to me to watch them. But, you know, I've always said I don't want to ever work in the public. You know, I want to actually be working with high performers, and because that's where I enjoy my space. I enjoy what I do. I enjoy the people I work with.
All right. Yeah, and Nick, it's funny you said that. Nick Saban actually has a famous little video clip where he says the exact same thing you're saying, that, you know, that average performers and high performers cannot get along, and he goes as far to say they can't be on the same team. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, because their personalities do not mix. So, well, that's some great info there, Coy. Dakota, you want to take a bourbon break?
Bourbon break time. Blackland bourbon whiskey, it's delicious. I really like it. Again, the bottle is fantastic. It's a cool, like, piece that you could have on your counter. You know, it's not going to look unsightly. Again, Fort Worth, it's got a nice caramel flavor to it to me. It's still got that burn and that taste of a bourbon, but it's also got a little bit of hint of caramel. So I'm going to go
9.0. 9.0. That's what I'm talking about. You beat me on rating too.
Like. Yeah. Yeah, man.
Well, and let's tell all our listeners, where did we get that bottle of bourbon?
We got that bottle of bourbon at Cheers Vineyard in Gluckstadt.
So if you are in the Jackson metro area and you are looking for the best selection of bourbon, whiskeys, vodkas, whatever liquor you can think of, wines, they've got it. Go talk to JT at Cheers Vineyard and get you whatever alcohol you want.
Yes, and please do. I mean, JT has told us some stories now of people coming in asking to speak with him from listening to the podcast, and we absolutely love hearing that kind of stuff. So please go talk to him. He's a great dude. His actual name is John Thomas, so if he doesn't immediately answer to JT, that's why we call him that on the podcast. But yeah, great dude. He has a great team under him as well. And they're all super knowledgeable. So walk into Cheers, tell them we sent you, and get yourself a great bottle of wine or bourbon. Back to the podcast. Coy, what is the current state of tech, in your opinion? And what do you see some trends happening in 24?
Current state of tech. So AI has been all in the news. That's on the tip of everybody's tongue. AI this, AI that. I think my shoes now came with AI.
Nice.
If I read the ad correctly. There's a lot of BS in the AI world.
Some more acronyms. I like it.
Yeah, no, that's what we're more familiar with, I'd hope. So for a long time, there's been a conversation about business intelligence, which is, you know, how you use the data, what questions you're asking it. It's, you know, we've collected data for a long time. What do we do with it? You know, Facebook, your social media platforms, you know, Twitter's, all those big guys, they know what to do with it. They're collecting small little data shards about everybody to use it. And that information is valuable for advertising, right? Well, you can use data for manufacturing. You can use data for buying trends, or even just, I don't know, recommending what toothpaste you're going to buy next at the grocery store, right? This is all kind of helpful, even. It can be. And AI is going into more of a predictive state of those things. You know, we've been tracking the kind of toothpaste for the past 20 years. It's probably time to start advertising a more enamel rebuilding toothpaste to you, not just, you know, Crest fluoride or whatever. We're going to start talking about old people toothpaste. You know, we're going to start talking about denture creams. AI is going to, you know, kind of understand that conversation. AI can be used for all kinds of things. It is a beautiful, beautiful invention. It's not yet sentient. It's not something people need to go to bed at night worrying about. That's not at all what where we're at today. But the uses of it are endless, right? So AI and manufacturing, boundless opportunities there, because manufacturing produces more data than any human can read. And honestly, it's more data than anybody can conceivably start asking intelligent questions to, right? But a computer can think of new questions and can ask them and produce results. It's fascinating to watch and to build these learning platforms. It's also fascinating to see the inventiveness of people using AI to have these conversations.
It's almost like open source at that point, right?
It's really a community of people, which is, we're going full circle here, but mm-hmm. it's really a way to involve people from all kinds of backgrounds and experiences and professional capabilities, you know, to actually get them involved. And I think we're really embarking on an age of ease of use for all of us. And I think that's going to be great. AIs can do a lot of number crunching for us automatically. So I think the medical implications there.
I was just about to say, I'm really excited to see what the medical side of things. They've already discovered new drugs to fight cancer and what they thought was antibiotic resistant bacteria. just through the use of AI. And now with Google's quantum computer, which can process data like thousands of times faster than the fastest supercomputer right now, you combine those two things together, and I mean, the sky's the limit, right?
That's right. So that's where, I guess, SES's future is headed, is into the, I'm going to call it a combination of BI, AI, and manufacturing signal data. We're actually launching a new product this year, kind of going into AI. It's called CoreView, and it's a way for manufacturers to gather all the millions of signal data that they have in their production lines and start to make sense of it, like real sense of it. You know, we're giving context to that data that we've been collecting and seeing for years. And with that context, now we're able to avoid manufacturing mistakes, you know, less waste. We have better prime product output.
Wow. Right?
We have predictive analysis on, hey, look, last time the plant was running this particular product under these conditions and it started raining, we failed our quality check. What I want to be able to say is, looks like rain.
Yeah.
Right? And say, let's make some adjustments before we produce bad product. Wow. It's going to save the industry millions.
Yeah.
We're starting right here in Mississippi, which is exciting. And we're going to be undercutting the competition's price by a fraction.
Wow.
It's going to turn the industry upside down.
That's fantastic.
I'm launching in April.
We're excited.
Well, that's awesome. And yeah. It's always good to hear.
Shameless plug.
It's always good to hear companies, local companies here that are on the cutting edge of technology and that you're willing to say, hey, you know, you change as the technology changes. That we don't, you know, I think that's so important for a company to you say, hey, we always have to be looking forward to what's coming because, I mean, things change so quickly at a rapid pace now. If you're not willing to make those changes, your business will fail.
Well, so. And, you know, I will say this. Not all change is good.
Well, that is right? True.
That can cause havoc.
Right. You know?
It has to be well adopted.
Right.
You know, and that's going, I love that we're coming back to these circles again, but if the entire community in a business is not involved or have a say in that change, then, you know, whose idea was it really? You know,
right.
What is that product really built for?
Right.
It was if you only involved, you know, the operation, the plant manager and the operator on that. Well, the business unit is going to say, where are my production reports?
Yeah.
I need to see this. Involving the entire community in these software builds are much, much better, you know. And from a tech security point of view, that's improving a whole lot too, right? We used to say, keep the bad guys out.
Right.
Right. And that kind of the MO, right? Yeah, better antivirus, AV sure. Antivirus, better email spam filtering. What if I told you no matter what you did, you could not absolutely keep somebody out? Can we all agree that that's probably where we are these days?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
But so what does an AI learning model look like that learns those tools and continually adapts to the new hacker tools, right?
That's right. So let's adopt now a philosophy of that we will be hacked. What do we do about it then?
Right.
It's about recoverability. It's about making sure that the assets that a threat actor would have access to are encrypted. So even though they downloaded an encrypted file, they can't use it.
Right.
Right? This is that modern age of computing and thinking. And the world's going to have to catch up. We have a lot of catching up to do on a lot of systems that have been in place for 20 and 30 years. They're big systems. They have to be rethought. They have to be rebuilt. It's time to do it. Because these threat actors are infiltrating our networks. A lot of them are state-sponsored, which means they're sponsored by entire countries. And these are huge buckets of money.
Right.
They outnumber the good guys, you know, 100-1. It's a losing battle. So we just need to make sure that whatever they do get access to, you know, can't be used or, you know, is otherwise unusable. And then our recoverability, you know, let's get rid of ransomware. That's ridiculous that we still have to pay ransomware when we could just have immutable backups.
Yeah. Right.
There's simple answers.
Yep.
They're not free, but they're a heck of a lot less costly than going down or having to rebuild or having to have employee or even customer private information out there.
Sure.
Well, Coy, we appreciate you coming on today. And, I mean, great information. I think this is one of the top podcasts that we've had so far on the podcast.
It's a great episode.
Got some great info from you. For all our listeners, we'd like to take this time. Maybe there's someone out there, they're business owners. They say, hey, we haven't looked at our tech. You know, maybe we need to get with somebody to make sure we're doing what we need to do to protect our business or to upgrade our business. What's the best way for them to get in touch with SES?
They could email us at info@bethegeek.com. They could call us at 601-939-7533, or they could visit our website, www.bethegeek.com. That's BETHEGEEK.com.
Great deal. And before we go, what's your rating on the bourbon?
I'm going to agree with a 9.0. This bourbon is fantastic. It's got a great smell.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very smooth. I might even go a little bit higher, but I think I'm going to stick with the 9.
9.0. We'll put the rank in right at 8.9. How 8.9. Does that sound?
That sounds good.
And to all our listeners, go follow us on social media. And however you stream this podcast, if you would, please give us a rating and subscribe. And we'll see you next week. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode.
If you have any feedback or would like to be featured, reach out to us at bourbonandbusinesspodcast@gmail.com.
Or find us on Instagram at bourbonandbusinesspodcast.
Thanks again for listening.
Follow us for more content and info on the next episode.